Thank you, Christoph. We now come to the last session of the meeting, and we're sticking with the theme of what's relevant to the investment community, and specifically, given that the prime focus of the activities of the IASB is to produce useful reports for users, and those users typically are people that make capital allocation decisions. One of the challenges that the board has had to deal with in the past, and still a continuing challenge, is even though those reports are for the benefit of investors, it is very, very challenging to get input from investors during the due process of developing a standard, whether it is buy-side or sell-side analysts, whether it's the asset owners or the asset managers. It's a challenge, and so this topic is, and this presentation involving Barbara and Alison is really seeking the council's input, and this is a topic that does come to the user group that meets on the morning of every second day of every council meeting, and we had discussion this morning. But this is now trying to involve the entire council to see whether we as a group can provide insights and additional assistance to enable the staff to better engage with investors at an earlier stage and get their input into the standard setting process, given that the standards that we are promulgating are ultimately for their benefit. So over to you, Barbara.
Thank you, Charles. I think Charles has actually done the tee-up and the introduction and the summary for me, so I don't have to do anything. But good afternoon, everyone. I'm Barbara Davidson. I head up the investor program here at the IASB. I do know some of you. For those of you who don't know me, brief background, I started in audit a long time ago, and I went over to the accounting policy investment banks, two investment banks, one in Asia and one in London, and then I joined the IASB almost 5 years ago. So I'm actually 60. I just look really good. But about a year ago, I started this role. And so, as Charles said, we are here to talk to you a little bit about a review of our investor engagement program at the IASB. I wanted to give you just a quick background, and some of it already, Charles already touched on some of it. But basically, in our paper, we reflected back to the conceptual framework, where we define our primary user of financial statements. And those are effectively existing and potential investors, lenders, and others who, while they use financial statement, they have to use general purpose financial statements for their information and decision-making needs because they can't access any other information from companies. And so with this as our primary user, we look at how to engage effectively with the investment community. We started actively seeking investor input about, I'd say, 8 years ago. And we found that although preparers and auditors, as you know, are very vocal and are happy to talk to us, investors are not as, it's not as easy for us to speak to investors. And that's for a variety of reasons. Charles mentioned that, but you know, a lot of those you know, their investors are not accountants. It's not their day job. Some of them already think that other investors are talking to us, so they don't have to. And others may be concerned about looking like a conflict of interest with their clients. So we have a variety of reasons that investors are hesitant to speak to us. So we assigned a staff person to the role in 2010 to try to focus more on this group. Hillary Eastman took over in 2011. Many of you may know her. She did a fabulous job of increasing the profile of the outreach of our investor program. She increased our contact base significantly, and she brought awareness up to the engagement teams. I took over the role last March, and with that, we decided that it was time, now that we have a really good contact base and we have started bringing the teams up to speed, it's time to review the strategy again, review the focus that we have when we want to talk to investors, and look at our interaction with investors and the teams. So as a result of that, we actually hired Alison Thomas, who's here to my right, to help us consult. Alison is ex-PwC. I'm sure many of you know her. You may not know she's ex-PwC, but that's only because she's trying to move to the U.S. for some reason that I don't know. And she was smart and married an American, so she's moving to the U.S. But in the interim, while she tries to get her visa or whatever you want to call it, green card, she has been kind enough to help us review our strategy. And so she's been working with us since November. We've gone through and we've talked to a lot of people, and we've talked to some investors, we've talked to board members, we've talked to staff, and now we're also talking to you as part of this strategy review. And so we have the questions in our agenda paper 7 that we'd like to discuss with you. I know this is a big group, so I want to give you some context on these questions before we get into the discussion, so I'm not quite sure how to structure this. So in terms of our questions, the first one we focus on is about our objective of the investor engagement. And to give you a little bit of background as to what we've already heard, from our discussions, we've pretty much had consensus as to what the objective of our engagement should be, and that is that we want to make sure we get relevant input from these primary users, the investment community. We want to make sure we speak to the right people, and we speak to those who are also very vocal. They may or may not be the same people in the investment community. And we want to make sure that we're satisfying any due process requirements that we have. So we have some three big pieces that we looked at. And there are some who think we maybe should also be educating investors on our current standards. So when we go to that question, I'd like you to think if you'd have anything you'd like to add to that objective. The second part of this question, A, I don't know why I call it A, B, C. It's easier to 1, 2, 3. But anyway, A1 asks whether you think that our activities are meeting the objectives of our outreach. So if you agree with the types of objectives that I've just described, do you think that what we're doing actually meets those objectives? And another, try to give you some context around this, the teams are actively involved with reaching out to investors on the projects. Most of the time, it's exposure drafts and some discussion papers. Internally, we know this. The question is whether externally that you're aware of that, and if you are aware of that, if you think that what we're doing is meeting what we're trying to do. Second question, B, is part of that is we would like you to consider whether you think it's transparent how the board incorporates investor views into their decisions and whether you think the board's reflecting investor views in their decisions. And then C and D, I think, speak for themselves. So in terms of going through the questions, maybe we'll go back to the first question about the objective of our investor engagement. And I would first ask you if you agree or if you have anything to add to what I outlined. That would be that we want to obtain relevant input from investors, that we want to speak to the right people and to those who are vocal in the investor engagement community, and that we want to meet our due process requirements. Does anyone have anything they think should be added to those objectives?
Or indeed deleted.
No deleting. And so am I calling on people, or is that Charles's job?
Anne, go ahead.
Thanks, Barbara. I think there's something to add, just specifically on that question that you just asked, which is about, you've got in D a question about how to incentivize and engage. And I think it should specifically include educate. And maybe that's because I'm based in the United States, but it's the biggest capital market, hasn't signed up for IFRS. There's a big brouhaha with the SEC in the run-up to that. And I think it would be extremely useful if some of the lurking anxiety, there's a sort of sense of relief, oh, we don't have to do this now, but it's going to come back. There's some really basic educational stuff to do about what the work program is, why does it matter that US GAAP and IFRS are different, where has the harmonization process got to, what are the outstanding issues, and the big fat, what's in it for me? So I know Scott Evans, when he was on this council for Tia Cref, was very tuned in on that and did an amount of work. But in the webinar series or the slides and presentations that you do, I think it would be really helpful to get more support in the US community in advance of taking another run at it.
Thank you. We'll ask helpers to help us with that.
Surya.
Thank you, Charles. I think definitely one of the bright spots in the engagement over the last couple of years has been the various outreach activity, whether it is with users, preparers, national standard setters, and so on. And it's quite interesting to see that the very community which the ISB seeks to serve is disinterested in coming to engage with them. So the question we have to ask, it's not so much a case of incentivize them. They should be there on their own accord and be pushing us rather than we pulling them. I'm not sure I have the answer to the question, but it's certainly something we should continue to dwell upon in future meetings.
I think that's an interesting point in terms of if they should be pushing us, then why aren't they? Is there something that we should be doing differently to help them in that process?
One question I would ask is, how far have you taken the investor outreach? Because I know in the early days it was probably London specific. Have you taken it to the other geographies, and I think to the US or to Asia? And have you worked with local investor bodies in those jurisdictions to get people to come in? Because I was quite shocked a few years back when I visited Japan for an XBRL meeting, and I found that people there actually pay to visit an XBRL conference. And
I find that shocking too. So
I know. And Tara-san, as you know, is an evangelist in XBRL. He gathers these people around. So clearly there are people somewhere in the world who manage to get people to pay even for the most interesting of topics. We should be able to do something about this.
We do. In answer to your question, we do reach out all over the world. Obviously, we do focus more on the IFRS, the jurisdictions that have adopted IFRS or that are looking to adopt IFRS. But the U.S. is also one of our focus stakeholder groups because there are such large asset owners and asset managers. But I think that it's interesting. If you ask the question, that means that we're not visible enough, or we're just not showing. We need to raise the profile more. Yeah.
Barbara, perhaps expanding on Surya's point, just an observation based on having been a regular attendee at those investor sessions such as this morning. I just wonder whether we shouldn't aim at the end of each of those sessions to have some quite specific action points that participants either agree or that the staff agree, and then at the subsequent meeting we can review the actual action taken and the outcomes and just build that as a discipline to ensure that the observation that Surya has made is not correct, that you know we're not letting anything fall between the cracks.
We'll start with today's, don't worry. I'll give you some action points.
Well, I think you're getting strong endorsement for question A with the you know the very useful addition by Anne of including education as part of the objectives.
Okay.
Can we move on to question B?
Yes, please. So in question B, we ask if you have an understanding of the process undertaken by the board and the teams as to how they embed the views of the investment community in their decision-making. So is it transparent to you how the views of investors are incorporated into the board's decisions? And if no, why? Whereas Anne saying no.
Yes, Anne saying
no. Why, Anne?
Why don't I understand? you have a complicated structure, and there's a lot of consultation, and there's an element of politics, and there's a bit of vested interests. And so quite where the investment community, which is obviously, as you rightly say, the prime user, fits into that. And I think Surya's right. There's an element here of, you know, it's like, why aren't we all fit, and why don't we lose weight, and we were eating the chocolate chip cookies at the tea break, and not going for the fruit. There's all those things where that we have to take responsibility as investors, but I do think it's a function of the fact that it's you have this complex structure, you know, the whole of the different levels of the boards. And I think there's been some, questions about the governance So there's and it's not quite, you know, like the spell book for Harry Potter, but I think I'm probably not untypical in being unclear about quite where the investor bit fits in.
Barbara, a question for you that's relevant to this. With the leases discussion that we had, part of the papers that were included in our pack was a summary of the outreach with investors. I wonder whether it would be possible, certainly with all of the members of this council, to actually disseminate on other outreach programs dealing with other standards what the position was with outreach targeting investors. So that way at least those of us sitting around here can't say, no, we don't know what the process has been or what the outcome has been.
Yeah, thank you. That's actually a good point, because we've started talking about doing that exact thing. So we're talking about now trying to make sure we have investor summaries, investor focus summaries, not only to disseminate to the people we spoke to, but also to have it more obvious about investor views. But these would be non-attributed, because that's one of the things we find when we speak to investors is they don't want, still want to have confidential discussions, and a lot of the investors don't submit comment letters. And so the way we think that we could provide the feedback that we've received from investors in a confidential way is doing a summary like you've seen for the leases and putting it on the relative web pages or web page. Yeah. So, and I think part of that is what Charles is saying, is we're going to encourage the teams or ask the teams to send that back to the people they've spoken to, those summaries, to show the summaries that fed to the board. But I don't know if that answers the other part of the question, which is how has the board responded to the feedback received. And I think we need to, we're thinking of ways to summarize that as well. So maybe we do have the basis for conclusions. We may have to pull out some of the information from the standards and send it to the investors we spoke to and say, you know, here's the summary of what we've heard, here's the decisions the board has made, and here is where we think these two fit together. Obviously, we want to try to do it effectively and short so that people can read it and the staff don't have to take a long time doing it, because we want to make sure it's done. So I don't know if anyone thinks that would be helpful, or if there are other ways of getting back what the board decided based on what they've heard. We're happy to hear.
Marcus.
Just a question out of curiosity. It's kind of hard for me to imagine that if you put forward the proposals by the investors on an anonymous basis, how you can put due process around that.
I mean, that's a good question. We have that discussion as well internally, and we think we're going to develop a process that targets. We'll be speaking to different types of people, and we'll make that process more clear. And it'll target different. We'll have a decision on how the board is going to make sure they've spoken to some of the biggest IFRS users in the different jurisdictions, or some kind of factor that makes sure that we are talking to the people that have the biggest stake, and then we'll also be going to obviously be talking to the people who want to talk to us. So we're going to make sure that we're going maybe in both directions. So I understand that. And we'll also be encouraging comment letters, because that's the best way we can do it. But if we can't have comment letters, we're going to make sure we have a process that's clear as to who we're reaching out to. And we're also looking at exploring at other ways of making that information obvious as to who we've spoken to. But we're still in the process of discussing it. So it's all very top secret. No, but I mean, that's a good point. I think that's one that we have to talk about. And if anyone has any thoughts about other ways of doing it, we would like to hear.
Can I just sort of add a little? I think your point is a very, very good one. It's very hard from the outside looking in to see whether the board has just spoken to a bunch of people who agree with them, or whether they've gone, speaking frankly, or whether they've gone out into the investment community and sought the views of the heaviest users of accounts, those who have strong understanding of the topics under review. I think a lot can be done, despite the reluctance of the investment community often to put their names to comment letters. I think a lot can be done by doing a better job of describing the characteristics of the organizations and individuals with whom the board currently engages. So I think, you know, that there's the board has, I think, transformed its outreach in recent years. I think being more visible about the extent, the depth and breadth of that engagement is a relatively straightforward step.
Linda.
I think a lot of the topics that the users have to deal with are very, very complex. And so there's a lot of communication gap because the IASB is coming at it from their perspective. The users all around the world have different perspectives. And so that communication gap is very hard to close. And I think Anne's idea of education is a good idea. I do know when there's investor outreach in my industry, I actually get calls from the analysts before that just to get up to speed on some of the things so that they can actually try to participate. But I'm not so sure it wouldn't be a good idea to have joint meetings at the beginning, and then if they want anonymity at the end of it, just to kick the preparers out. But we can actually help close the communication gaps because they're just going to ask us the same questions. And so is there a way that we can actually just help bridge some of that communication and education back to their local needs?
Yes, I think that's a good idea, and we're talking about doing that. We do have one meeting once a year with the Global Preparers Forum and the CMAC, the Capital Markets Advisory Committee, and that's kind of like a, quote, joint meeting between the two groups to get them in the same room and hash out some of the concerns. But I think you're absolutely right, that the more we can do that and have everyone talking to each other, it would probably resolve issues, you know, more effectively and quicker. And if you would like to set up some of those meetings for us, we'd be happy to talk to you. It's a good idea.
Okay, question three. Oh, sorry. Gaurav, do you have a point?
Yeah, you know that this might be actually that my comment might be rather related to question three, but I guess one of your challenge to reach the wider or appropriate investment group is that the analysts or portfolio managers, their job is not thinking about it, the accounting standard settings. They are, most of them should be very, interested in the disclosure part of the accounting standards. But depending upon the sectors, that their demand or needs could be really different. So that I know that the IASB are not making the accounting standards based upon sectors. IFRS is a rather, more general purpose. So, that the many analysts, most analysts, they tend to accept that the standards as kind of given to their analysis. So, what they are interested in the product of IASB. So the very few analysts recognize, or analysts and users recognize, that the importance to involve in this accounting standards setting process. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm the very few people who happen to recognize how important or how responsible we should be. And one of my suggestions is that depending upon the accounting standards, that IASB and the local association like SAAJ or CFA Institute, etc., or CRAF, something like CRAF, you can form the forum on the disclosure on this specific accounting standards, inviting some sector analyst, what kind of disclosure you need to find out what kind of disclosures that users need. So by doing so, I think that the increasing number, I hope that the increasing number of users recognize that the importance of participating in the decision-making process. So that the, yeah, it might be a kind of a, you know, long way around, but the, I think that this kind of fundamental, you know, the, it, in a sense, educational process might be required.
Thank you. I think that also, so you know, I think last year, maybe, was it last year, we did one disclosure form with investors and preparers, but I think what that did was kind of try to focus the areas that we wanted to try to look at short-term versus long-term. So what your idea is good, because I think we need to go back and do that again and probably continue to do that as we focus the disclosures and where we can improve.
I think that this is a kind of good idea that, you know, sometimes that the users, particularly sector analysts, doesn't know what kind of standards you are developing. So, you know, that the kind of the having the disclosure forum on the certain standard under development may increase the people's awareness. What are you doing right now?
Lothar?
Yeah, thanks. I think this education aspect is one which could really help, and I'm not totally sure how far that's already being done. I mean, given the fact that what Goro already said, the investors and analysts are dealing with the numbers, but not necessarily accounting professionals. And so any kind of easy way to have some help in interpreting the rules without assuming that everybody would go and dig through all the material which is there and would even know the website of IFRS, if they know I can get some help here on an easy basis, I think that would draw in some. And that relates more to question three with the preparers. I mean, the analysts or investors, but especially analysts, more often go to the preparer and say, hey, how should I interpret that? But that's because, of course, a large part of the number of the numbers, and we had this discussion before, is non-GAAP, which the analysts use and which the companies kind of put in front of everything. So the question doesn't only revolve around pure IFRS accounting, but also what do the companies do? So that makes this kind of link maybe even more important as a potential inroad.
Yeah, I actually wanted to mention that. Thank you, Lothar. And I wanted to mention that we have, while we were still talking about the objectives of the program, we have hired an ex-sell-side analyst to be our investor. We call him our investor education manager. He was at our investor subcommittee meeting this morning. His name is Fred Nieto, and we brought him in to start developing some more investor-friendly materials. So we're just discussing then what types of materials we might want to develop. And while we're doing that in the interim, if there are any issues that you think your organizations or analyst colleagues would need to help understanding or they would like some discussion, we are having Fred discuss directly with analysts or investors these different topics. So there are already a couple of webcasts on our internet that he's done with the CFA Institute with Pat Finnegan about the new consolidation standards, and we'll be thinking about others. But also, if there are any immediate needs that you have, please let me know, and we'll put you in touch with Fred. So, I mean, it's good to hear that you think that's important, because we brought him on originally to try to help kind of get in touch with more investors as our outreach, but now we're realizing that's actually a bigger we probably need to make this a bigger focus.
Francois.
Thank you, Charles. I mean, a question on a different aspect, how much of your efforts have you to date tried to integrate into the research activities? Because, I mean, looking at whether some possible requirements meet the needs of users, I would have thought that those requirements should be an answer to some needs. So I was interested in seeing how you would see your involvement very early on in the research activities.
I noticed that Alan has left conveniently, right? But I keep saying that's a good question, but it's another good question, and actually that's one of the things we're talking about, and that is actually kind of, for me, the question C is about the timing of bringing investors in, and so should we be bringing them in early on in the research process so that we are asking the questions that they're asking us to address versus bringing them in after the discussion paper or the exposure draft and we already have questions that we're asking them. I think we need to do both, and the problem we have about the timing is that some investors tell us they don't want to talk to us until it's effective. So if it's not going to affect me next quarter, I don't want to know, because you know there could be a five-year project down the line. But there are others that want to get involved early on and into because there are issues that they think we need to address. And so what we need to do is make sure we get the right people in at the right time, because I think you're right. I mean, I'm speaking without Alan here, but I think Alan also appreciates the importance of making sure we get investors on in the early research stage to make sure we're focusing some of the questions to the board anyway for investor needs.
Right, I think we can move on to question three.
So question three is a kind of what we've started talking about. I mean, when we talk about whether we put the appropriate weight on information needs of the investors in our decision-making process, I think for me part of this is the timing, but this also goes back to part of it could be also the transparency that we have in terms of the board considering the investor views, or if there's any other thoughts you have as to whether you think the board is actually considering the investor needs at the appropriate level when we're making our decision, when the board is making their decisions. And I would ask you then to consider if you think our timing of speaking to investors is the right time, because right now we're only talking to them probably after the exposure drafts are out. So does silence mean that everyone thinks we're doing everything perfectly? Ah, good.
Anne, did you have a point?
Yes. Oh, sorry, that was a bit loud.
It was a big yes.
I think it probably goes back to this education issue. So before you start the work, what's the problem you're trying to solve? And do investors think it's a problem for them? Or is it something the analyst community makes money out of dealing with, like the lease issue? There's a lot of people getting busy on that one, sorting it out. So I think probably clarity about what's the problem you're trying to solve, what do you need from them, what's in it for me, you know, that kind of selfish angle to it all. And then knowing what the, you know, the timeline is for the process. So it's speak now, then we'll speak to you again in a year, or it'll then, you know. But I think often there's a lack of understanding about what it is you're doing. I mean, even something like financial instruments, I don't think people understand what that project's all about. They know there are 600 derivatives for every dollar or pound in the, you know, economy. They know it was a big part of the financial crisis. They do their own sort of, they have their own ways of assessing what's going on, but they're rather baffled by both the regulatory process and I think the accounting standard. So. And some of it as well is actually being able to get completely out of the technical mode and not quite, you know, Sesame Street standard, but almost. And you're going to practice on a five-year-old and then come to a fund manager. It probably worked quite well. Or you can practice on me. That's as good.
I was going to say they can practice on me.
Danita.
Well, just quickly, I mean, obviously I'm not an investor, or not a practicing investor, but it seems like to me if the point of financial reporting is for the benefit of investors and other users of financial statements, it does strike me that waiting until you have an exposure draft is too late. I appreciate the fact that it's very difficult to get the whole user community involved early in the process, but I do think that some of what Anne is talking about is really critical in the early stages. That doesn't mean that you need to get into all the gory details, and that doesn't mean that they need to be involved in all the sausage making at every point along the way. But understanding, I mean, is taking on a project would they even support that? Is it a problem for them? Kind of getting some directional guidance at the beginning seems like it would be appropriate.
Barbara, perhaps linking the last question, one of the points you made with, you know, this question, it is challenging to get the user community involved at any stage. I think it's harder to get them involved at a very early stage because it's just too esoteric and remote for them. But equally, I think it's important to have some investor input very, very early on, including the research stage. So if you can identify analysts from either the buy side or the sell side that have got some interest and that might be prepared to periodically roll their sleeves up and get involved, then I think that would be a useful way forward.
Thomas.
Thomas?
Well, thank you. I'm a little bit puzzled, I must say, because my feeling is that we tend to create some kind of, let's say, preferential treatment for the investor community. So I wouldn't tend to put them as a special group which has to be treated as first place, because there are different interests there. I mean, the preparers have an interest, the securities regulators have an interest, the investors have an interest. So I would take probably another approach. I would say make regular workshops with the investors and then show what is going on and what the plans are. Otherwise, I wouldn't understand if the ISB puts forward its work plan or a gender consultation. Everybody can take part in it. I mean, I could say for IOSCA, we just don't take part in this consultation because we have bilateral communication between the IFRS Foundation and IOSCA, so we don't say anything. I think there should be a little bit of commitment by the investors to say we have to get involved. So I think I would tease them by, let's say, continuous roundtables, as Siren said, to, let's say, every year once, and say, this is the outline, what is coming up in the next year, what do you think about it? So that gives them not the preferential treatment with which I have a little bit of, well, concern about, but that brings them to the table and say, you have to say something now.
Thank you. Thomas, I just wanted to make a point that I understand what you're saying about the preferential treatment, and actually I don't think it's preferential. It might appear to be, but I actually think what we're trying to do is get them up to the same level of interaction that we have with everyone else. So they have some preferential treatment until we get them to the point where we can get them involved in the agenda consultation on a regular basis, you know, get them to meetings more actively, get them more comfortable in talking to us, writing comment letters. So I think we have to give more attention to them until they're more comfortable with it. And that's really the way I see this program anyway. Obviously, we'll continue to talk to them after we kind of build up the confidence or their interaction with us. But I think from that, I mean, you could argue they're also supposed to be the primary users, but I know there are other stakeholders who have interests as well. So it's important to talk to everyone. So I think if it looks like we're giving them preferential treatment, at least for me, it's because we need to make sure we're getting them, we have to get them more active. And I don't think they're as active as the other stakeholders, to be honest.
Don't take me too literal on preferential treatment. It's my English, which is probably not the right word, but it sounds a little bit like preferential.
Well, I think that you have a point, though. I think it's important that people understand why we're doing this, and I think it's a fair point.
Latha?
Yeah, although I think, I mean, to some degree, I guess the underlying mission is to make rules for users like investors. So I don't know if there isn't some preferential idea in there. But anyway, but that wasn't my point. I mean, it's this whole thing of making rules without having first the guys who the rules should be for asking for them or something like that. And it is, of course, very difficult because it's a very diverse community of hundreds and thousands, whatever, of organizations and companies and individuals and so on. And we were doing some with the CRUF, some feedback gathering of the plans of you know what is to be done of the schedule and so on. The other thing is, I don't know. if that's a little bit stupid, but to me it seems you have situations like this where somebody does something for somebody else without the somebody else first asking. I mean, a doctor doesn't ask you what to do for him. He analyzes and diagnoses what the problem of a patient is and then tries to find a cure. I mean, just as an example. So I think it's still a process which works. And then if at some point in the rule-setting process the users come in and what was discussed also give a summary of what the responses were and how to react to that. I think that's very helpful. And maybe last comment, there's also not, I think you mentioned it already, not really enough awareness in the investor and analyst community that this process is there, that you can actually have some influence. So the first point would be how to get this across, and probably you'd need to use the media a bit more. I mean, the first thing is something like Bloomberg, where if you have industry-specific things which say, hey, wait a minute, there's some changes coming up and they will have some effect, and that's portrayed in the that's reported in the industry segment of Bloomberg, then the analyst will see it and the investor will see it. And if the investor asks the analyst, hey, what do you think? What effect does it have? That's very powerful. Then they'll definitely start asking. Plus, of course, in the press or so, what we discussed, if there's an interesting subject like leases, and so why not try to give more effort to place this with at least an indication also in the articles that actually users can influence what's happening here. You know, I don't think everybody really is aware of that.
Thank you. Move on to the last question.
Sure. I think the last question asks about whether we should be doing anything differently because of the limitations, obviously, on investors' time and priorities. And I think that we've brought up a lot of things that we should be doing differently to get the investor feedback. So I would just ask if anyone has any other thoughts as to how we might effectively involve investors that we haven't really kind of discussed at an overall level in this meeting.
Barbara, I'll reiterate a point I made this morning, and I can probably say this because I spent 30 years of my life as an investor, so it's sort of talking against the community that I came from. But to some extent, I think one has to use a carrot and stick approach. It's noticeable that investors, by and large, did not take an interest in corporate governance, e.g. even bothering to vote until they were compelled to, or until there's regulation or their clients start to demand it. And similarly, it's not the investment managers, but rather the asset owners that are driving the whole sustainability focus, given the short-term focus of investment managers as opposed to the much longer-term focus of the asset owners, particularly those dealing with pensions and liabilities that extend decades into the future. And it seems to me that to some extent one has to almost shame the investors into action. You know, it's sort of a call to action, and therefore I think a concerted public relations campaign using a small number of public commentators who are interested in this area, who are influential, and who probably start with a bias that business people can't be trusted and investment managers are all overpaid, etc. But you can present it, I think, in a positive light in terms of some of the good things that are coming down the pipeline in terms of the projects that the board's working on and what that's going to mean, and try and use that as a way of using some sort of a stick to get more of them to the table. Linda.
Yeah, I was thinking that to get the users to the table, I wonder how much management is at the table first, and because it's really management that's trying to explain the results to the users. And in some of the standards that are just more technical of nature, like some of the consolidation, I actually don't think that the users will be that interested, unless if it's mostly just balance sheet and it's disclosure, it provides them additional disclosure. So it really is, how does management view the things? And if you can get to that and get them to get to the users, I think you've put it in a context. And yesterday on leases, Francoise mentioned the need for testing. I have no knowledge of the lease standards, so I can't talk intelligently about it. But I do understand that to dumb things down, sometimes examples are the easiest way to do that. So if you could walk through, this is what it means, this is the information you'll be getting, this is the information we think you want, they'll be pretty good at responding, but you have to make it easy and dumb it down. But it has to be relevant for management, first of all, to be relevant to users.
Linda, I think you make a good point in terms of, you know, the complexity and therefore, you know, maybe the relevance of some standards to users. Your point's absolutely valid, but there are others where really the standard is going to be to the benefit of users, such as leases would be a good example. And knowing that in a lot of cases, in fact, probably with nearly every standard, there's going to be some people that don't like it. In the case of leases, it's going to be some segments of the preparers community. So to the extent that the users can become vocal in endorsing and supporting it, it helps give the board both the courage and the ability to push the standards forward. We must be getting late in the day, Barbara, because I think we've exhausted people's questions and comments.
That's so. What I like to do. So, well, thank you very much, and I hope that I will be back sometime to bring you more about our investor strategy. And in the interim, I'm sure I'll be trying to interface with you guys on an individual basis. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.